Recording. Okay, it is 8:30 and I would like to call this meeting to order. As a reminder, please turn off or mute all of your electronic devices. As many of you know, this is my first time serving as chair today, so please bear with me. It might be a little bumpy and hopefully Mr. Lohe can jump in and save me if I forget what I'm supposed to do. Victoria, would you please do the roll call?
Yes. Dr. Byrne? Ms. Crager?
Here.
Ms. Frost?
Here.
Dr. James? Mr. Lohe?
Here.
Dr. Nosley?
Here.
Ms. Solomon?
Here.
Dr. Thompson?
Here.
Dr. Ray? We do have quorum.
Great. Also, please note that we have Assistant Attorney General Mark Harris present today as well. We are going to begin with 2273 John Montana DVM. Tracy, would you please read the case summary?
Yes. Case 2273. The complainant is Melanie Faulkner. The respondent is John Montana, DVM. On November 22, 2021, Jackson, an approximate one-year-old male English Mastiff, was presented to respondent for lethargy and anorexia. The dog was febrile and blood was collected for testing. A couple days later, it was documented in the medical record that the dog began coughing and had nasal congestion. Therefore, antibiotics were dispensed. On November 29, 2021, complainant was advised that the dog was positive for valley fever and fluconazole was prescribed. A couple days later, Entyce was dispensed due to the dog's continuing to be inappetent. Complainant had not spoken to respondent since the initial exam regarding the dog's condition or blood results. On December 15, 2021, the dog was presented to Dr. Wood at Legacy Veterinary Services for a second opinion. The dog was febrile and had pneumonia. Antibiotics were dispensed. The dog's condition waxed and waned. He was treated with sub-Q fluids, Prevacox, and holistic therapies. On December 29, 2021, Dr. Wood repeated blood work, which revealed the dog had severely elevated kidney values. The dog was administered IV fluids and ozone therapy. Referral to an emergency facility was made. On December 30th, 2021, the dog was presented to vet med for evaluation and hospitalization. The dog was diagnosed with renal failure and was hospitalized for treatment and supportive care. On January 3rd, 2022, due to the dog's guarded prognosis, he was humanely euthanized. And the committee concluded that possible violations of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred. And it was moved and seconded the board find ARS 3222-3212 as it relates to R311-5011 for failure to show respect to the pet owner for never speaking to the owner regarding the valley fever results or regarding the owner's concerns for the dog's condition. Also, ARS 3222-3221 as it relates to R311-502-L4. Failure to document the dog's heart rate and respiratory rate in the medical record on November 2nd, 2021, and ARS 3222-3221 as it relates to R311-502-L5, failure to document the dog's tentative or definitive diagnosis in the medical record on November 22nd, 2021. The motion was approved with a vote of 5-0.
Thank you, Tracy. We do not have the respondent here, but we do have Dave Stoll monitoring. Are you going to read a statement?
Okay, go ahead.
Good morning, everybody. Dr. Montana cannot be here today, but asks that I read this statement on his behalf. As always, we thank you for giving us this opportunity to respond to the investigative committee's recommendation in this matter. In that regard, we respectfully disagree that Dr. Montana committed a violation of R311-5011 on November 29, 2021, when he delegated the task of communicating the valley fever test results to a staff member, Ms. Patricia Calkins. For the record, it is not a per se violation of the Arizona Veterinary Practice Act to delegate communications to staff members, and I venture to say it's probably more common than not that routine test results such as this are communicated by staff and not personally by the veterinarian, especially in these days where veterinarians are extremely busy. In your materials, you have a statement from Ms. Calkins, who has worked for Dr. Montana for over 17 years. As set forth in her statement, Ms. Calkins, at Dr. Montana's direction, called the owner to let her know that Jackson's valley fever test had come back positive. Ms. Calkins then advised the owner that Dr. Montana wanted to get Jackson started on fluconazole, and she provided detailed information as to various options the owner had for either picking up the medication or obtaining it through a variety of pharmacies. The owner had no medical questions regarding the test result and did not ask to speak to Dr. Montana. Her only concerns were about the logistics for getting the prescription filled, and these concerns were immediately addressed by Ms. Calkins with the assistance of Dr. Montana's office manager, Wanda, who's been with Dr. Montana for the past 25 years. The owner then called the practice on November 30th, 2021, because she didn't understand what the term valley fever titer meant. That call was handled by one of Dr. Montana's technicians, Stephen Montana, because Dr. Montana had left for the day. Stephen has also submitted a statement that you have in your materials. He has worked for Dr. Montana for over 5 years and was fully capable of explaining what a valley fever titer was, and he addressed the owner's concerns about the fluconazole medication. At no time during that conversation did the owner ask to speak to Dr. Montana, or he would have called the owner back when he returned to the office. All the owner's questions were answered by Stephen, who also told the owner that if Jackson's appetite became a concern, she should call the practice so that they could bring this to Dr. Montana's attention. As set forth in his statement, Stephen also told the owner that Dr. Montana would most likely want to see Jackson for a recheck if his appetite did not improve. Stephen ended the conversation by telling the owner to not hesitate to call the clinic back if Jackson's condition declined in any way. The next contact the practice had with the owner was approximately 2 weeks later, when the owner called on December 16th, 2021 and asked to have the lab results re-emailed to her because she was having a mobile veterinarian come to her home. That was the sole intent behind the phone call. The practice receptionist, Ms. Martinez, immediately responded to the request and emailed the owner the lab work results that she requested. This was an appropriate task for staff to perform, and since the owner did not ask to speak with a veterinarian and had no medical questions or concern, there was no reason for Dr. Montana to personally speak to the owner on December 16th. In sum, it's standard of care for Dr. Montana's staff to convey the valley fever test results, address the owner's question about the titer, and help the owner get the fluconazole prescription filled. And we failed to see how Dr. Montana's failure to personally have those discussions with the owner constitutes a violation of R311-5011. This was all information that is commonly and routinely provided by staff, and the owner was repeatedly advised that if she had any concerns or if Dr. Jackson's condition declined, she should bring him in for a visit and a re-examination by Dr. Montana. She never called and asked for a recheck or to speak to Dr. Montana. Next, it is true that the medical record for November 22nd did not include a definitive diagnosis, and that is because Dr. Montana didn't have one at that time. This was the initial visit, and that's why he ordered diagnostics, including a valley fever test, which obviously shows that valley fever was on his list of tentative diagnoses. As a result, we don't feel that Dr. Montana violated R311-502-L4 because he clearly did have a tentative diagnosis, valley fever, a diagnosis that ultimately proved to be correct because Jackson tested positive. Finally, we submit that the medical record entry for November 22nd does not include a heart or respiration rate, and that was an oversight on Dr. Montana's part. It is also a minor record-keeping violation that did not affect the diagnosis or care of the animal in any way. As a result, Dr. Montana would welcome a letter of concern with regard to this oversight or possibly entertain a consent agreement for a violation of ARS Section 3222-33D3. Thank you.
Thank you. We now have the complainant here, Melanie Faulkner. Would you like to come up and speak?
Yes, please.
Please state your name for the record.
Melanie Faulkner.
Great. Melanie, keep in mind we've read all the materials that you submitted, and I can now give you up to 5 minutes to speak.
Okay, thank you. First of all, I want to thank you for letting me speak again. I'm going to let Carrie read this.
Okay. Could you please state your name for the record?
Gary Tomashaw.
Okay, thank you.
Glendale, Arizona. So, all right, she's obviously pretty emotional about this, so. All right. Okay, we chose Dr. Montana to take care of our boy because I knew him for many years. I knew Dr. Montana for many years. Dr. Montana knew Jackson from the age of 3 months. Dr. Montana gave Jackson his shots and saw Jackson every 6 weeks for nail trims, weigh-ins, and any other medical problems he might have. Jackson was not just a walk-in when he got sick. When Jackson got sick at age 10 months, I never expected Dr. Montana to neglect or be negligent with Jackson or me by not answering or returning my many phone calls of concern and the overall care of my sick boy. In addition, based on the care that we were giving Jackson from a young age with Dr. Montana, I want to make it very clear, at no time did I ever speak to Dr. Montana. Repeat that again. At no time did I ever speak to Dr. Montana after the initial blood test, even though I called many times. And our medical records show that. Nor did Dr. Montana at any time after the initial blood test call me or prescribe an antibiotic for Jackson. If he had, I or Melody would have driven down right away to the office and brought Jackson with us to ensure Dr. Montana would look at him, as I was desperate to get my boy well and have him looked at. Melody and I always brought Jackson to Dr. Montana's office together. Jackson, as you know, was diagnosed with a low valley fever titer of 116, a disease that is not generally fatal, and per U of A Valley Fever Center for Excellence. Most dogs with adequate antifungal therapy do recover from this disease, especially with early diagnosis and intervention. Dr. Montana's lack of urgency, concern, and not returning phone calls and communicate proper care, assisting me in a proper diagnosis and a care regimen for Jackson are grossly negligent, uncaring, and professional.
Unprofessional, sorry.
And I believe Dr. Montana is the reason Jackson lost his battle at 13 months of age, and Melody lost her dog, as you can see, her favorite. I am asking the board to consider a gross negligence and lack of proper care of Jackson and assign the appropriate disciplinary action, including, as I requested in the initial complaint, the reimbursement to us of all Jackson's medical expenses, which she has copies for the board to review. Again, thank you for giving us the opportunity to introduce you to Jackson and consider our request for disciplinary action and monetary compensation.
Thank you both.
Thank you.
We are very sorry for your loss of Jackson. You may step back. Dr. Nosley is the lead, so I'll let him take over.
Okay, thank you. In this case, I think, as in many, communication is the overriding problem here. I don't think this was a simple case of a initial diagnosis of valley fever and then subsequent actions of putting the dog on fluconazole. I think it started out that way, but we very quickly the case changed, and Jackson had a lot of other problems likely related to the valley fever, but certainly different. It appears that we had a pneumonia. It appears that his condition deteriorated, and during this time frame when these things were happening, the owner was trying to get information from the clinic. And in these cases, while we do rely very heavily on our staff, especially in these times, to do client communication, there's a limit to what staff should be relaying to an owner. Valley fever in the beginning, if the owner is not familiar with it, they're going to have a lot of questions, and that requires, in my opinion, a doctor specifically explaining that to the owner. But more pressing than when Jackson had his developing what was diagnosed as pneumonia, certainly there were concerns there and multiple attempts then again to talk to the doctor. So I would agree with the investigative committee that there are issues with this case, and I agree with their the motion. Certainly the first two as outlined, and I would like to hear from other members how they feel about it, and then proceed from there. Anyone else have any input?
I disagree. If a veterinarian directs your team to provide education, and mm-hmm. the education and the information is provided, mm-hmm. there is no statute that says, well, in these cases, only the doctor can talk to them. In these cases, the team can talk to them. And I think that the board stepping into that world is a problem, because mm-hmm. there are often times that team, I think, is much better at communicating to an owner complicated diagnostics. I've heard veterinarians speak to owners about conditions and they're overwhelmed. Doctors have a hard time bringing it down to where it's understandable. And in the response that we just heard from the respondent, there wasn't a specific ask for him, and every single interaction was addressed and there wasn't an ask, you know. So I mean, I think that you have to weigh all of it, you know. So how you feel about it and the staff you work with may be mm-hmm. completely different how he feels about it and the team he works with, mm-hmm. who have been with him for a very long time. I mean, it's very rare to have somebody with you that long. So I don't know, I disagree with this case should have been handled differently. I think it was really, really awful and really unfortunate.
Sure. So. Yeah. And I appreciate that, and we do rely very heavily on our staff. However, I think if we follow that guideline, we might likely never have doctors talking to clients.
If we would just
pass on, in this case, we had a client with questions that, even if I agree and say there are staff members that do an excellent job of relaying information, in an owner's mind, they're not going to be comfortable with that unless they hear it from the doctor.
As an owner or me as an owner? Because that's not, I mean, I can tell you how many times I've been to my personal doctor's office and not had a doctor give me my results or explain to me.
I would appreciate that there's a difference between human medicine and animals and veterinary medicine in terms of explaining complicated disease processes. And an owner feels comfortable, more likely to feel comfortable after talking to the doctor, only from the standpoint that I heard this directly from the doctor. Sometimes the staff will give these canned responses, and that doesn't really pertain like it should to the individual case. And there is in the record that they requested to speak to the doctor, and the doctor said, I'm leaving today, and here's what I want you to tell the owner. I think that crosses the line. Well, I appreciate everything you're saying, and the staff is invaluable. I think in this particular case, where a case is going bad, that this needed direct doctor communication.
Ms. Solomon has a comment?
Yes, Dr. Nosley, I concur with your recommendation, and I think there's been a lot of conflicting information in essence regarding listening to the IC audio. The complainant made it clear that it was, I think, more than one occasion asked to speak to Dr. Montana. There's even a discrepancy about antibiotics being
right.
offered and supposedly declined by mm-hmm. the owner, which the owner denies vehemently that happened. So to me, it's clear that there's a communication problem. And the ultimate responsibility for a communication problem rests with the veterinarian. So.
I agree, and in terms of the, we were talking about the doxycycline, I think that the respondent, that could have been very easily handled by providing us with a copy of a label produced for that medication and show us this was dispensed. And I didn't see that anywhere. So the complainant says that never happened. The clinic says it was dispensed. I think that would have been pretty easy to show us that, yes, it was dispensed, that it wasn't. And I think that's started the cascading of this communication problem.
Oh, I want to make it clear. I don't believe that there's a communication issue. That's most of the cases we see. But pinning the communication issue on that the team was talking to the client
mm-hmm.
doesn't make sense to me. Now, what Ms. Solomon said, yes, you have it's typically the complainant vehemently disagrees with what the respondent's saying. That's normal for us, right?
Sure.
And that, yes, there's failures in producing certain pieces of information. And so, yes, communication problem, absolutely. But you can't go back and say, well, because the team was talking to them. Either it's not who it was, it's the information that's not getting through. You know, I don't believe that a team member cannot talk to a client, and that we get to after the fact say, oh, but in this case, it shouldn't have been the team member, it should have been the doctor. Like, the board doesn't get to decide that.
I think in this case, we can definitely say that because of the, what was happening with Jackson. As a veterinarian, in our responsibility to protect our patients and our clients, we need to be involved with these cases on a direct communication with the client. When it comes to things like you need, the initial I have no problem calling and saying, okay, here's the Valley Fever results and this is what we recommend. I don't have any problem with that. But after that, I believe it was the veterinarian's responsibility. We do have a statute that says failure to show respect to the pet owner, and I believe this fall, I agree with the investigative committee that this is a perfect example of a failure to show respect to the owner for never speaking to them.
Dr. Nosley, do you feel that you have additional questions for either party as far as making motion to move it to an informal, or do you think you have?
No, I think there's enough. I don't think we need to hear directly. I think the narrative that Mr. Stoll pretty much tells the side of
okay.
the clinic, and I'm satisfied with that. So I would like to make a motion to accept the investigative committee's finding of a violation of 32-22-32-12 as it relates to R11-501, the failure to show respect to the pet owner for not speaking to them or following up on the case. And also ARS 32-22-32-21 as it relates to R3-11-502-L4 to failure to document in the record. They didn't talk about the record, but there was the medical record was very lacking. As to the third, I would like to strike that. I don't believe that not having a definitive or tentative diagnosis is, I don't believe we should follow that. So the first two, I would make a motion. and not the thing.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second.
And are we wrapping that into a consent agreement?
Yeah, I would offer a consent agreement.
We'll vote on it first and then.
And would that be including the findings of fact, adopting the committee's?
Do we need to do that now, or can we vote on the motion first?
You could do them together if you'd like. You could do findings of fact and conclusions of law as amended together.
So I can wrap this all into one motion? Okay, then I would also make a motion that we accept the findings of fact and the conclusions of law in this case and offer a consent agreement.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion?
So if you don't believe that reporting the results is a problem, shouldn't that be amended?
That is correct. So findings of facts and conclusions of law as modified?
Oh, as modified, yeah.
No, but I'm saying the first finding, it says regarding the Valley Fever results in Tater.
Mm-hmm.
You said you didn't have a problem with that, but that's part of what the committee recommended.
No, the follow-up.
Yes.
The initial Valley Fever, but the follow-up on the Valley Fever questions on the tires and what they mean.
But it's saying regarding the results. So are you going to?
It's all involved with the results. It's all, if we didn't have that result, we wouldn't have a need for the doctor it is part of the result. I said I didn't have a problem with the initial reporting after that.
I guess I'm reading it differently.
Okay. I would leave it like it is.
Okay. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed?
Nay.
Okay, motion passes.
Okay, and I would make a motion to offer a consent agreement. And at this time is when we would ask for priors.
Yes. So Dr. Montana had a complaint in 2012. He was found in violation of 3222, 32 number 11, gross negligence for administering an excessive amount of fluids during the surgical procedure. He was placed on probation for 1 year and required to do 4 hours of continuing education in IV fluid therapy.
That's all.
It.
Okay. So I would make a motion to offer the respondent in case 2273 a consent agreement to include a period of probation for 1 year to obtain 3 hours of continuing education in the area of client communication and 3 hours in medical record keeping.
Second.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. Let's do roll call.
Can we just add to it and if not accepted, invite in for an informal interview?
Okay.
Okay.
Roll call.
That's amended. Roll call.
Okay. Ms. Frost?
Nay.
Mr. Lohi?
Aye.
Dr. Nosley?
Aye.
Ms. Solomon?
Aye.
Dr. Thompson?
Aye.
Ms. Krager?
Aye.
Motion passes.
Okay. Thank you for being here today. And I apologize, I did not mention the order that we are taking the IIRs in. The next one we're gonna do is 2277, Alexis Roth, DVM, and then we're just gonna go back to the top and go down, so starting at 2274 after this. Okay, so Tracy, could you read the case summary for 2277?
I'll first state that Mr. Grayson had presented some additional information this morning and it was presented to you by Ms. Whitmore. So case 2277, the complainant is Danielle Grayson. The respondent is Alexis Roth, DVM. On June 27, 2021, complainant requested his dog, Roxy, an 11-year-old female Labrador mix, be euthanized due to the dog's declining quality of life. Respondent complied, and the dog was humanely euthanized. Complainant expressed concerns with respondent's euthanasia services. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded the board dismissed this issue of no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 5-0.
Thank you, Tracy. In this case, we do not have the respondent, but we have Dave Stoll present. Are you speaking or just monitoring? Okay, great. We also have the complainant here, Daniel Grayson. You would like to come forward and speak?
Yes, please.
Please state your name for the record.
Daniel Grayson.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Grayson. And we have read the materials that you have submitted. I can now give you up to 5 minutes to speak.
Okay, thank you. I want to thank you for giving the opportunity to speak before you. On or about 8th of June, I received a letter from investigating committee stating that investigating committee recommends to dismiss this issue with no violation. I respectfully disagree. And it's a matter of serious concern to me that the investigating committee did not reach out to Denise Ruby, who is my neighbor and who was there as volunteer for my emotional support, as well as witness to what she saw prior, during, and after euthanizing of my animal, Roxy. Denise is holding valuable information on failures and errors Dr. Roth committed and not consistent with AVMA that I failed to see and was not previously addressed in my first complaint to Dr. Roth and the owner of Savano and Animal Hospital and investigating committee. Her statement dated July 17, 2022 has to be read and included as new evidence for investigating committee to review and get better understanding to what transpired during my visit with Dr. Roth on June 27, 2021. It was an eye-opening experience for me when I read her statement, and she shared new information that was not previously disclosed to me. And she's retired from her medical career years ago, and she has a better knowledge and understanding on how medical community operates and functions than I do or most people do. I'm asking this board to give this matter another chance for further investigation based on new supporting evidence to be consistent with my claim and my complaint to Dr. Roth, to the owner of the Shivano Hospital, and as well as the investigating committee. I believe that all this could have been avoided if Dr. Roth would have just responded to my written complaint that I was not pleased with her service that was provided to euthanize my animal and asked for official apology, and it would have been all over with. I wouldn't have to go through the hoops and loops and even be here. In closing, I'm asking the board to consider dismiss the case, but issue a letter of concern as you deem necessary.
Thank you, Mr. Grayson, and we are so sorry for the loss of your pet, Roxy.
Thank you very much.
Ms. Frost is the lead on this case, so I'll let her lead the discussion.
Okay, so I think it's worth saying that probably one of the most difficult things, not only for a veterinarian, but for the team, is losing a patient, whether it's humane euthanasia or another reason. And they're very memorable as such. And, you know, reading the complaint, again, it's, you know, having a beloved pet such as Roxy for such a long time, it's incredibly difficult and emotional. And as with, you know, the team was clearly impacted and recalled Mr. Grayson and Roxy clearly from what they were able to provide in their response. And so reviewing both sides, communication is typically why we're here. And I think that all of us can learn, you know, to communicate better. Now, from the point where Dr. Roth was interacting during Roxy's euthanasia, it all seemed very similar to what I experience in practice from my position, and all of that seemed in order, and it was very interesting to see the perspective from the client. And where I appreciate the concerns, I think that it needs to be said that they don't close their eyes most of the time. I've met very few doctors that can get that to happen after the fact, but that's very normal. And to be uncomfortable, veterinarians never want their patients uncomfortable, especially in this situation. And so the injection of propofol that was given is to help them relax. So where I appreciate the perspective that was provided utilizing the AVMA guidelines. The AVMA does issue a lot of guidelines, and our veterinarians and community, they take these seriously. However, this is not regulated. This is not a regulatory body. And so where I wish this was simple, it isn't. It will always be complicated. But I would agree with the investigative committee and recommend a dismiss with no violation.
You're making a motion?
Yes, I'm making a motion to dismiss with no violation.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion to dismiss and a second. Any further discussion?
Yes, to follow up on Ms. Frost's comments, yeah, the AVMA guidelines are not state statutes. And as a state regulatory body, we can only regulate within the scope of those state statutes. The AVMI guidelines, as I generally understand them as a layperson, go far beyond our statutes. So you may want to share that with Ms. Ruby.
Right. And I also wanted to add that I read in the respondents' response that they did in fact try and reach out to the client via phone.
Oh, yes,
it wasn't by letter, but she did try and reach out to them by phone to have a better understanding of what, you know, what the issues were. So I just wanted that to be done.
Thank you. Yes, I think that it is tough because communication sometimes written and you lose some inflection, right, in voice, and where a lot of communication is nonverbal, sometimes even phone and writing lacks, you know, right. Sometimes it is nice to be able to have a face-to-face. So yeah, I think that's unfortunate that they didn't get to speak.
Okay, well, we have a motion and a second to dismiss. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you for being here today. Okay, next up is 2274 Bernard Mangone, BBM. Tracy, would you read the case summary?
Yes. Case 2274, the complainant is Jane McKay, the respondent is Bernard Mangone, BBM. In December, complainant requested vaccination information for her dogs, Denali, a 3-year-old female rescue, and Ginger, a 6-year-old female Australian Shepherd, through respondent's premises website. After a week without receiving her pet's medical records, complainant called the premises and was advised that respondent had to review the information prior to releasing the records. According to complainant, she still had not received the medical records by January 2nd, 2022. And the committee concluded that possible violations of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded the board find ARS 3220-3212 as it relates to R311-5018, failure to provide copies of the dog's medical records within 10 days from the animal owner or other licensed veterinarian's request. The motion was approved with a vote of 5-0.
Okay, great. Thank you, Tracy. We do not have the respondent nor complainant here, and Ms. Solomon is the lead.
Yes, I think I can make this pretty short and sweet. As the investigative committee noted, it's pretty straightforward. Although we don't know the exact date that the complainant initially requested the records, we do know when the DVM from Portland did, and that was on January the 8th, but they weren't sent until February the 4th. So I concur with the investigative committee's recommendation to find violation of ARS 3222-3212 as it relates to AAC R311-5018, failure to provide copies of the dog's medical records within 10 days of the owner or other licensed veterinarian's request. So I would include in that motion a consent agreement adopting the findings of fact and conclusions of law that are in the executive committee's report, and ordering a 1-year probation and, oh, let me ask for priors before I get to that, if I may.
You can't roll that much into one.
Yeah, okay.
So we'll, should we stop there and
okay,
do
yeah,
the
roll? Then ask for priors okay, and then go to the order. Got it.
Do we have a second to that motion?
Second.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. Let's do roll call.
Ms. Frost?
Aye.
Mr. Logie?
Aye.
Dr. Nosley?
Aye.
Ms. Solomon?
Aye.
Dr. Thompson?
Aye.
Ms. Crager?
Aye.
She passes.
Do we have priors?
Yes. So in 2013, Dr. Mangone was found in violation of 3222B3 administrative records violation, and he was offered a consent agreement with a $100 civil penalty. And then in 2020, the board concluded that although there was a dismissed with no violation, Dr. Mangone was issued a letter of concern for ensuring medical records were complete, and that's the extent of it.
Seems like we have an ongoing problem with medical records here. So I would order 1-year probation. I would order 4 units of CE and medical records. Since this is the third medical records violation, a penalty of $250.
Can we clarify, is this complaint because he's the premise license holder?
Yes, that's correct.
So this one, I have a little bit of problem with this one because this is very much an administrative thing. Veterinarians, and I don't know about the veterinarians here, I don't know how many times you guys have personally taken records requests and sent the records, but it's typically through the front desk. This is not his failure. This is a front desk failure. So that's pretty extreme for this issue.
It was my understanding reading the record that the delay was caused by his insisting on reviewing the record before it was sent.
That's a corporate policy. The records have to be reviewed prior to sending
them.
He's
their employee.
He is employed, but this, yeah, that's.
But it still was a couple months, wasn't it?
No,
a month from when the veterinarian in Portland, and it was longer than that.
Right.
But
we don't know the exact date.
40 to 50 days.
Saying he.
Pardon? 40 to 50 days.
Yeah.
At least 2 requests.
Yeah.
Plus the veterinary clinic request.
Yeah. I just again, I definitely not the veterinarian in this case. So again, CE doesn't make any sense to me because he doesn't even have control over this process.
Still responsible.
If he's the premise license holder, he does.
Yeah,
yes.
Train his staff.
Corporate or no.
I mean, it's similar to situations where we're going to have a case coming up, I believe, where we've seen a young veterinarian right out of school thinking that they have a good mentor when maybe the mentor is not as good as they think it is. You got to protect your own license, not do what your boss tells you.
Right.
Yeah.
Whether it's corporate or not, it's tougher that way, but it's your license, your job to protect your license because nobody else is going to look out for it.
Yeah, I don't disagree. It's your job to protect your license. I just don't see what the purpose of CE is in this situation.
On the hope that the behavior of the problems with medical records that have historically occurred, administrative or not, can still be resolved through education.
Right. Hoping. So.
Hoping. Yes.
That's all we can. But certainly we can agree to disagree here. So it looks like we have the consent agreement for 1 year, 4 hours CE, $250 fine. Did we have a second on that?
Second.
Second.
And Madam Chair, if not accepted, remains to or invite informal.
If not accepted within
30 days.
30 days, remanded to informal. Thank you. Thank you, Mark.
Second that piece as well.
Second.
Okay. Great, let's do roll call again.
Ms. Frost?
Nay.
Mr. Logue?
Aye.
Dr. Nosley?
Aye.
Ms. Solomon?
Aye.
Dr. Thompson?
Aye.
Ms. Krieger?
Aye.
Motion passes.